Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about everything under the sun as it relates to money, the ins and outs. And our whole goal is to make sure you have a happier, healthier relationship with money. Now, I want to welcome you all here today. I want to say thank you for everybody that is sharing with your friends and family. We just hit 187,000 people who are watching our show on a weekly basis. So we're very excited about that. Now, we have some very important guests that our viewers at SavingWithSteve.us have been talking about for a long time and wanting to know. You know what? First one, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have been gaining popularity. Bitcoin just hit $56,710 a coin. People who purchased it early on have actually done very, very well. How would you like to go to an ATM, purchase Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency to purchase something new? It's not far off. You might even be able to walk into a Tesla store and buy one. Now, we have Ben Weiss, who's one of the co-founders at CoinFlip, to walk us through what's happening in the world of cryptocurrency, how they're working with regulators and all that to make sure that crypto comes out from, I'm going to say, the black curtain, so to speak. Now, today, I'll be talking about, hey, how to avoid those early retirement mishaps, as well as that. Imagine this. You've just submitted your application for a mortgage loan. The financial institution's pulling your credit, checking out your social security number, and all of a sudden they find 10 other people with your same social security. Yet you're the only one who really exists because the rest of the applications have synthetic names, synthetic backgrounds, all sorts of things. Well, hey, it's kind of scary, isn't it? We have Naftali Harris with CenturyLink here to help us understand what's going on and what you can do about it, if there's anything you can do about it. So with that, I want to introduce to Ben Weiss from CoinFlip, the U.S. largest crypto ATM provider with over 1,400 units across the country. They've helped people convert their currencies into the nine most traded cryptocurrencies, offering people a way to invest in assets, bank away cash, and learn more about the finances along the way. Now, one of the things that you don't know is CoinFlip, you know, Ben Weiss here, is also working with regulators like FinCEN, like Department of Justice. They're communicating or trying to communicate with the Biden administration about how to properly do this in our environment to make sure it's safe for everybody. Now, Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Really appreciate it. I think we're going to have a fascinating show today.
Well, I'm looking forward to that too. I think the topic is something else. So how did you and Daniel decide CoinFlip was, what brought you to just getting this started up?
We tried to buy Bitcoin in 2015 and it was almost impossible to buy. So we wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to get cryptocurrency. That's why we now have 2,000 ATMs in 45 states. It's super important that everyone has the chance to get involved in cryptocurrency and financial inclusion.
Oh, that's great. Now, you know what, there's a statement called unbanked, and I've had a lot of questions about that. Could you explain that? My understanding is there's like 2 billion people are unbanked. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, so there's unbanked and underbanked. Unbanked is people who don't have a bank account, and underbanked is people who may have a bank account, but you know, they sort of bounce from bank to bank because they can't afford overdraft fees, or you know, there's predatory practices in certain areas by some banks. And I think in the US, it's 20 to 25% of people are unbanked or underbanked. But in the world, like I think you said, 2 billion, it is huge. And as much as I love crypto and what it's doing in the US, I'm even more passionate about, I think, what it's going to do in developing countries and in the third world. I think it's going to give some people a real shot at, you know, financial and economic freedom.
So how is it going to do that?
So in the, like, we're used to the dollar being somewhat stable, mm-hmm. and we sort of take that for granted. Look at all these countries where people's savings are basically just inflated away, or, you know, there's no rule of law. There's no due process. The government can just seize people's bank accounts. So I think that crypto is really the greatest equalizer out there right now. It's going to do more for the world than any single policy could.
You know what? You just brought something that brought a memory to me, because when I worked overseas, I was working in South Africa and I went to Zaire on a vacation. And the week after I was there, the ruler changed their currency from a red script to a blue script, which means anybody that had the red script, it was worthless. So yeah. I can understand. I could see that if everybody can have Bitcoin, it's a worldwide currency. And you know what? Nobody has to worry about inflation, although some of the arbitrages that go away with currency would go away, but that's okay. It just makes things a lot more.
It doesn't have to replace fiat currency. It's not either or. You know, the dollar can still be used. People can still use credit cards to buy coffee, but there's definitely a legitimate use case for Bitcoin. And as nice as it is for like investors to make money when the price goes up, I think, you know, Bitcoin is so much more than that. And it's really a movement, and it is on par with the creation of the internet, industrial revolution, things like that.
Oh yeah. You know, it's turning into like when you had horse and buggy into a car. So it's a big thing. Now, help us, you know, a lot of people know about Bitcoin, but you actually trade 9 different cryptocurrencies on your platform. So what are the other cryptocurrencies? Obviously, Bitcoin's the big one because it has the highest value per coin. And where are the others? Where they stand? How long have they been around? That type of thing.
So Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, BNB, which is, you know, Binance Coin, I believe Dash, and there's other ones too. I know sometimes we go swap them in and out depending on customer demand. We could actually put any coin on the ATM. It's pretty doable from a tech perspective, but we still 95% of the demand is for Bitcoin. My personal opinion is I really love Bitcoin, you know, way more. I like Ether too, but Bitcoin is like by far my favorite currency. And you know, this isn't financial advice, but if a coin is worth 2 cents, sometimes people are like, oh, this could be the next Bitcoin. But a lot of times it's because it's worth 2 cents for a reason. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin is, you know, high priced for a reason. So there's a lot of options in the cryptocurrency space, which I think is great. But I think, you know, people also need to be careful with the coins that haven't been around for a long time. And, you know, I mean, Bitcoin has, you know, stood the test of time.
Okay.
10 years is a lot in this sort of tech world, especially, you know, with that volatility. Like when something goes down like it did, you know, in 2013 or 2017, usually like a tech stock wouldn't bounce back from that. But Bitcoin is so robust. While exchanges have been hacked, Bitcoin itself has, that protocol has never been hacked.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know. Here's the thing. I've got friends that work at Google and Qualcomm, and some of them bought Bitcoin way back when they were they're buying for $100, and they've actually done very, very well. And you know what? Are they looking at as currency just like any other investment from an IRS standpoint, where they say, hey, you bought it for this, you sold it for this, you got to pay the difference in taxes?
It's like a stock, correct?
Okay, so look at it as a capital gain. So that's good to know, especially for everybody to get in there, because they have no clue about how, you know, what it's looked on. Now, help us understand how Flipcoin works. You know, if somebody goes to an ATM, how does that whole transaction work?
So coin flip, but actually I almost like Flipcoin more. It almost sounds better. But so at a coin flip ATM, all you need is your phone and cash. And, you know, depending on the level of cryptocurrency, the dollar amount you're buying, you know, you may need government issued ID. You know, we are regulated and we are registered like a bank with FinCEN. So, but you can go up to an ATM, get your coin within 10 minutes, 24/7 customer support. You don't need to be an expert to use it. We can help you. We can recommend the, you know, safest wallets to keep your cryptocurrency safe. We can sit on the phone while you complete your transaction, even if it's for $10. You know, and that's sort of from day one, we've always put the customer first.
That's wonderful. Everybody likes that. That means, well, obviously you'd want to make a transaction a little larger than $10, but if that's the case, that's nice to know that you're able to help out the little guy, so to speak. Now,
their average transaction's a couple $100, you know.
Okay. Now, So somebody could come in, they have a wallet, they can get connected through the ATM through the wallet, and then they can say, hey, I want to withdraw say $2,000 to go shopping somewhere?
So most people actually, like 95% are buying Bitcoin at our ATM. So it's almost like a reverse ATM. You can withdraw too, but I mean, most people want Bitcoin, not to cash it out. But it's as easy as you literally just scan your, like you can have it on a piece of paper or like on your phone. Most people use their phone. If you are familiar with cold storage, like Trezor is a great product. We recommend that as well. When you just have a QR code, all you do is scan it. Mm-hmm. It automatically puts your address in the machine. You know, you put in the cash, sends it right away. No delay. You can do it at 3 a.m. We're not a bank that closes at 5 p.m.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know what? I think this is great. This is a great time to take a break. So we're going to pay some bills and we'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insights on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you'll never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates like UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal and financial freedom. Also, follow us on Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton. You can join the Insiders Clubs. You can get guest gifts, guest books, special questions get answered on your behalf. So, you know what? Thank you all. Ben, welcome back to the show. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, one of the things that, you know what, a lot of people, they see Bitcoin's been around for 10 years. In fact, a lot of people don't realize it's actually been around for 10 years. At the beginning, with like anything, you hear the negative stuff too much, not much of the positive stuff. The big positive things is we've seen the value of Bitcoin go from almost a dollar to, you know what, over $56,000. And people are really excited about that. And then you hear the stories about people who forgot about their passcode and, you know, they can't find their $270 million. So, but what I'd like to talk to you about is, you know, like you're communicating or trying to communicate with regulators such as FinCEN, the Biden administration. You're looking to help educate people about the right way to integrate Bitcoin into our financial system or economy. So could you expand on what CoinFlip is doing with that? Or I think are you leading those efforts?
So I mean, we have a whole team of people. We have, you know, over 250 employees at CoinFlip, but we've always taken the position from day one that we encourage smart regulation. We love the US. We want to see the next Apple, the next Amazon, it's going to be something crypto related. And we'd love for that to be in the US and not overseas. Like, can you imagine if the US wasn't the place the internet took hold, it would be a whole different country. So super important to me just as a citizen of this country. But CoinFlip believes, you know, smart regulation, being proactive with the government. You know, the government doesn't want to get rid of jobs or stifle innovation. They want to protect consumers, protect national security, and, you know, don't, like, you know, protect people from crime. The government has a, you know, legitimate interest in all of those things. Mm-hmm. Now, are there knee-jerk reactions when people don't necessarily understand crypto? Sometimes, but, you know, most government officials are just trying to do the right thing.
You know what? I love that. Now, I need you to dispel a myth, because, you know, I hear this a few times. In fact, I got it on one of the viewer blogs. Well, Warren Warren Buffett said this. And I think there's a misnomer about that, because Warren Buffett didn't have a positive statement when it first came out. But obviously, you know what, that was based, you know, how friends talk to friends and give friends advice, and it's not great advice. So could you dispel that little myth we talked about a little earlier?
About that there's
no Warren Buffett said it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Warren Buffett's right most of the time, but not this time. I mean, the guy likes to invest in hamburgers and Coke, and he's made a living, you know, out of investing and value investing, and not, he's not a tech investor. He's not a venture capitalist. He invests in solid companies that, you know, are around for a long time and give dividends. So this, you know, he's, I mean, the facts prove him wrong on Bitcoin. Doesn't take away any of his success, but it's just one part where he's wrong on it.
Yep. No, that's great. That's great. So now, let's see. Okay. So all somebody has, so if somebody wants to go to get set up on CoinFlip, do they go to your website? How do they go about doing that?
So coinflip.tech, you can find an ATM probably within 10 minutes of you, or in 45 or 46 states. So easy to find one.
That's great. And then again, all the, you know what, there's a lot of novices who just don't have a clue. And you talked about earlier, the people who, it's a wallet. Help them, help me out with the wallet. Help me out with the electronic wallet. Help our viewers out, or listeners out on, hey, you know, I know you don't want to make recommendations, but you know, there was one that you talked about. Hey, this is a good one.
Red Wallet, your phone, we really, BRD, Red Wallet. You can get it in the app, it's free. So you use, most customers like to use their phone at the ATM, a wallet on their phone, super easy, super convenient. Now with these wallets, super important for your listeners to understand, you hold your Bitcoin, you own your Bitcoin. The wallet does not, like that company Bread has no access to your coin. So what you need to do is remember your password. There's also something called a recovery seed. It's either 12 or 24 letters. That's basically where your Bitcoin is. Those 12 or 24 words are your Bitcoin. You can smash your phone a million times. If you have those words, you get a new phone, you type them in, your wallet's, your Bitcoin's there. Your Bitcoin is not on your phone. It's not in the Bread wallet, really. It's, you know, I mean, it is in the Bread wallet, but it's not like physically there. It's with those 12 or 24 words. That is your money right there. So take that incredibly seriously when you set up your wallet. And every wallet has the same sort of 12 or 24 word recovery seed thing. Write those down, you know, have two copies. Don't share them with anyone ever. Scramble them if you have to, but that is the key. I know too many people who have lost too much money because they thought they would, you know, never lose their phone or something. So super important. If you have a lot of crypto, you probably don't want to hold it all on your phone. I recommend cold storage. The best company for that is Trezor. Same exact concept, but it's like a little jump drive. Again, your money's really not on that jump drive. You can lose that Trezor. My mom threw one of mine out one day. I was pretty disturbed, but I had, you know, this was like 4 years ago. I had those words, typed them back in, restored all the Bitcoin. So I think you don't need a Trezor unless you're sort of getting into like the doubt, like, you know, $10,000 of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But that is the most secure way to do it. And super important that, you know, with the freedom of Bitcoin, of be your own bank, comes the responsibility. You can't just call Trezor, BRD, and be like, I lost my recovery seat. Can you get my money back?
Those are great tips. I appreciate that. And I know our viewers will as well. Now, so basically, when you're looking at currency or the different crypto, I mean, there's 8, 9, and basically you're dealing with ones that you'll move them around on your platform depending on the demand for them at any given time. But you know what is, if somebody's, you know, you talked about Ether, you talked about Bitcoin. What are the top three or four that are in demand right now?
Bitcoin by far the most, then Ethereum, then Litecoin. Bitcoin is just solidly an asset and a currency. Ethereum is actually super cool from a tech perspective, but you actually, like, programmers pay for things like building smart contracts, coding, Solidity, all that stuff. They use Ether to, like, and gas to basically pay to like, you can program a million stuff on top of Ether. Ether is way cooler from a tech perspective, but it's like from an investment, from basic finance, like Bitcoin is, you know, Bitcoin is the hardest money there is in the world. So.
And then those are the top two. What was the other one you mentioned?
Litecoin. Litecoin.
Okay, it's called Lite.
Litecoin is basically just, it's actually pretty cool. It's just essentially a quicker sort of Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin's more robust, Bitcoin's more well known, but Litecoin has actually done some really cool things in terms of like the speed of transactions and stuff like that, that Bitcoin's even adopted after Litecoin has. So definitely a key player in the industry. And after those three, I mean, it drops off. You're talking about like 0.001%, you know, sort of uses for the other coins.
Okay.
Not that there's not like important projects there, but.
So for example, there's certain companies allow you to buy a house with Bitcoin. Some allow you to buy cars, pay for hotel rooms and all that stuff. So how does somebody go about doing something like that?
So, I mean, I personally would don't want, like if you're going to buy Bitcoin as an investment, probably a good idea. If you're going to buy, like you want to spend your Bitcoin to buy it to be a consumer, probably should just do it the easy way with cash. But a really interesting thing is if you've heard of like decentralized finance and DeFi, you can basically use your Bitcoin as collateral. Like let's say you have a bunch of Bitcoin because whatever you got in early, you want to buy a house because you have a family. You don't want to get out of your Bitcoin position. You're going to have to pay a capital gains anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You just basically loan cash against that Bitcoin, use that cash to buy the house, and then you're not out of your Bitcoin position. Also, BlockFi, that's a very reputable company. They pay about, I think, 5 to 10% interest rate to deposit your Bitcoin with them. I wouldn't put all your Bitcoin because, again, like there's some third-party risk there, but they're pretty reputable. And if people want to make, you know, you can't make any interest in a normal bank these days. So 5 to 10% interest on Bitcoin paid in Bitcoin is a very, very good opportunity for a lot of people.
Oh, wow. So basically that's almost like arbitraging. So if you were to, if you're using your Bitcoin as a, basically it's a margin loan when you're looking at a broker dealer and all they're doing is they're saying, hey, we can only lend you so much of the value, but you know what? We'll charge you an interest for that. And if somebody's paying 5 or 10%, that works out pretty well.
Well, you can also just loan them the money. You loan, like you could also loan, like deposit your Bitcoin with them and just get re-interest basically. So
that's wonderful. That's
there's a whole parallel financial system. Everything you see in the normal financial system, credit, loans, margin, trading, all these things. It's not like it's just developing with Bitcoin, but in 5 years, you will see every single thing you see with the normal financial system with Bitcoin, but you know, 5 times more efficient, 5 times more equitable, and 5 times, you know, more innovative.
Ben, that's wonderful. Hey, I appreciate you being on the show. And again, could you give out your website so everybody can go check you out? And if they want to start buying some Bitcoin, they know where, and they can keep watching this so they can get the wallet and the cold storage so they can do it properly.
Yeah, coinflip.tech. My personal Twitter, personal Instagram is Ben Coinflip. So people can reach out to me there as well.
I appreciate that, Ben. Hey, Ben, thanks for joining us. I hope you have a wonderful day. Hopefully have you back soon.
Yeah, thanks so much. Really interesting show today. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. See ya. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Steve Sexton and this is the Saving with Steve show. Now, what I'd like to do is just give a quick little recap. We had Ben Weiss of CoinFlip talking about cryptocurrency. They have almost 2,000 ATMs throughout the United States. He went through all the regulatory things. He talked to you about the smart way to get a wallet, to get cold storage if you have a lot of different crypto. So you want to, you know, you want to remember those things because it could make a difference in your future, because you don't want to be one of those guys on the news that just lost $270 million because you forgot your password. Now, later on, we're going to be talking about, you know, the mistakes people make when they retire early and how to avoid them. But now I want to talk to you about Neftali Harris. He's a co-founder at CenniLink. And I want to just key this up for you. You just put a loan application in at the mortgage place. And you know what? You got all your stuff in there. The company starts checking you out. And guess what? They found 10 other people with the same social security number with different names, different credit histories, the whole shot, and you're the only real one. It's called synthetic fraud, guys, and it's happening. And that's the one of the reasons why we have CenniLink here, and we have Neftali Harris. Neftali, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Steve.
Now, before we get into synthetic frauds and stuff like that, I would love for you to tell the story of how, you know what, CenniLink got started.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really interesting story, and it'll segue nicely into synthetic fraud. I was the first data scientist at the online lender Affirm, which does point of sale loans for e-commerce purchases. They're now publicly traded, which has been really exciting. And I was put in charge of managing the risk decisioning systems. So anytime someone would apply for a loan with the online lender Affirm, the code and models that I built and later the team that I led would build would decide whether or not someone would get approved. Now, on the fraud side, we spent most of our time thinking about identity theft, which, as we know, is when someone steals somebody else's identity. And one day, as we were reviewing cases, we found something really interesting. Exactly as you mentioned, someone had applied for credit with us 12 different times with the same name and date of birth, but 12 different social security numbers.
Oh.
And yeah, oh, is exactly what we said too. And we said to ourselves, look, there's no way there's 12 people all born on the same day, all with the same name, who all of a sudden decided today's the day we're going to get a loan from a firm. We said, look, these are not actually real people. That's, I think, pretty obvious just on the face of it. But we said to ourselves, you know what, before we close all these accounts, let's just double check with the credit bureaus, make sure that the bureaus also agree with us that these are not real people. And so we took a look at our attempts to pull credit reports. And to my huge shock, all 12 of them had real credit reports with really good 750 plus credit scores and loans from every major bank and lender. And at this point, I looked at this and I was like, how is it possible that this individual, obviously a fake person, nonetheless has a 750 credit score, and you look and it's like, wow, you got a $20,000 credit card from a major bank, and here's a $20,000 unsecured personal loan, and wow, they bought a $50,000 luxury car. And you started looking at this, and at some point, my co-founder who worked with me at a firm, he and I looked at each other, and we were like, hey, are we the crazy ones here? Are we the only ones that realize these are not actually real people? And after we had that observation, we went to the CEO of a firm, Max Levchin, who also founded PayPal, and mm-hmm. explained the situation to Max. And I was pretty scared, to be honest. I thought Max would be mad at us for wanting to leave his company and start a new one. But bless Max's heart, I owe a lot to him. He was really excited for us and said that we could start a new company as long as he could invest. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we were fortunate to have him lead our seed round, and that's how we got the company started.
Okay, so I want to. The first question I have is, how do these companies set up these synthetic identities, and how do they go about getting credit? I'm assuming the credit file doesn't last too long because they. Well, you can tell me because I don't.
Yeah, it's very, very surprising actually, because I thought this would be impossible. Like, how can you get a social security number? You know, how can you build credit for a person that doesn't exist? Like, how can you even do this? It turns out that our credit system is actually quite a bit more fragile than most of us would think. I was certainly shocked by this. So to everyone who's listening to the show around the world, please don't go and actually do this. I'm telling you how you would do this, but this is a felony. So don't actually go ahead and do this.
Yeah, don't go to jail.
Don't go to jail. Yeah. And yeah, don't do that. Don't take your life in this direction. But the way you actually do this is you make up a fake person. So make up a fake name and date of birth. That's the easy part. And you would think, hey, making up a social security number that's quote unquote real is hard, but it's actually not. It turns out that social security numbers have a particular structure. The first five digits of an SSN will tell you the date and year range in which it was issued. This was true throughout the whole history of SSNs up until June of 2011. And what the fraudsters will do is they'll actually pick an SSN. Typically, they'll pick one that was issued issued in the last 18 years. You know, so for example, they might pick a 2009 SSN issued in Wisconsin. And the reason they'll do that is if someone actually has that SSN, it's probably a 12-year-old living in Wisconsin who doesn't have any credit profile and they're not competing with them. And so you make up this name and date of birth, you pick an SSN. Now you have a name, date of birth, and SSN. And then the really crazy part here, which I couldn't believe, is the way that you build a credit profile, the way you get a credit report for this fake person, for the synthetic identity, is actually by applying for credit, believe it or not. The credit bureaus assume that if a bank, a reputable bank, is making an inquiry about some profile and they don't have this identity, they'll say, oh, well, you know, this bank has a strong know your customer program. They know what they're doing. If they're asking us about this identity, that must be a real person. And they'll actually go and create a credit report for someone that they previously had never heard of.
That's scary, because that means you have the credit reporting institutions are actually assuming that somebody else is doing their job. And in the middle, that's where the fraud is taking place.
Yeah. And Steve, it's even scarier than that, because everyone is sort of assuming everyone else knows what they're doing. So the credit bureaus are thinking, oh, banks, you know, understand what's going on here. Like, they know who their customers are. You know, the banks are, you know, being relied upon by the credit bureaus. But it goes the other direction, because most banks and financial institutions quite reasonably assume, hey, if somebody has a credit report, that must be a real person. And so both sides are relying on the other. The banks believe the credit bureaus know what they're doing. The credit bureaus believe the banks know what they're doing. And actually, both of them are pointing fingers at each other, and fraud is sort of proliferating in that gap.
Yeah, I can see. Wow. And now, okay, so what's the cost of synthetic fraud? I mean, obviously it's been happening. You're talking about somebody who bought a car, they've got a personal loan, and they did it all on you know, fake information. So obviously that bank isn't going to get paid back. So what's the actual cost and impact of, you know, people doing that? I'm going to assume there's, I don't want to assume, but I'm going to bet that there's a lot of this is going on, but it's probably happening in other places, might even be the United States.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And one of the things that's interesting about synthetic fraud in particular is that unlike identity theft, where there's a consumer that's really victimized by this, with synthetic fraud, you know, if I go make up a fake person and use that fake person to get credit, there isn't like a single like victim that will really find out about this necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of invisible. The cost of this, they're very real costs, but they're kind of invisible to most of the public. So I would separate out the costs into a couple of different categories. The first one is just a direct financial cost, which is borne primarily by financial institutions. And that cost works out to several billion dollars a year. It's a huge amount of money that is just going out the door to criminals that are able to trick financial institutions and the credit bureaus into thinking that they're real. So that's sort of a direct financial cost. There's actually a as big or even bigger cost associated with other kinds of financial crimes that are committed with synthetic identities. You know, if you think about it, if you wanted to commit a financial crime, whether it's laundering money from drugs or terrorist financing or what have you, a terrific way of doing that is push it through the account that you created in the name of a synthetic identity. It won't tie back to you. No one will ever, quote unquote, narc on you, and you can launder quite a bit of money or commit other kinds of financial crimes. And then lastly, of course, there's the cost which is borne by consumers, where if a bank needs to cover losses that they're suffering from synthetic fraud, all of our rates go up, all of our fees go up, the bank has to staff a larger team. This actually causes problems, particularly for young people and immigrants, who are harder to distinguish from fake people because they have shorter histories. And so the costs are definitely borne disproportionately by different groups.
Yeah, I can understand that. I was listening to a gentleman from the FBI about identity theft, and he says the best identities are of newborns, because they have 18 years before anybody's really going to find out anything. And the younger they are, the better. So, in fact, a lot of people, now how, you know, so the next real question, the next question I have really comes into how do we go about, how does SendyLink go about detecting this synthetic fraud? Before you get into that, we're gonna go ahead and take a break, okay? We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. We have Naftali Harris of CindyLink. Before we get into that, I just want to thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, associates know about the show. We had 423,000 listeners last month. We also had 187,000 people follow the show last week. So we're building. It's doing great. All the replays are available at www.savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, and I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you'll never miss a show. And to check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal and financial freedom. If you'd like to join us on Facebook to get more helpful financial tips and hints, you can always go to the Facebook page of Saving with Steve Sexton. You can also go back to the savingwithsteve.us for guests, gifts, more giveaways, more empowered information, and obviously check out the shows. Now, Naftali, thanks for joining us. We want to talk to you about how you guys go about detecting the, you know what, that that synthetic fraud, because it seems really scary that somebody can just kind of take over like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our approach to detecting synthetic fraud is really grounded in our deep understanding of what synthetic identities look like and how they differ from real people. In fact, we actually have an entire team of risk analysts that do investigations every day to find fraud. And we use the insights from those risk analysts to build the models that we have that differentiate. Now, as I mentioned, it's based on insights. And so we have a lot of different sorts of examples of that. One of them, for instance, is we'll look and see who the best owner of an SSN actually is. So for example, Steve, if I created a synthetic identity and I started using your SSN, one of the things that we would find is, hey, there's two profiles. One person, which has been using their SSN consistently for years and years, and the address history is consistent with that. Then here's a completely different profile, which in and of itself might look like, hey, this is reasonable, like this is self-consistent, except that we can see they're using the SSN of somebody else. That's a very basic example, but it's one of the things that we will look for. One other example that's a little bit more interesting, earlier on in our conversation, I mentioned that after June of 2011, the Social Security Administration started randomizing the SSNs that they give out. And we've done extensive research into what patterns of SSN issuance actually look like. And one of the things that we've discovered is in some cases, especially if a criminal is creating a whole ring of synthetic identities, there'll actually be a pattern for how they do this. For example, they won't literally do this, but this is illustrative at least. If you see a ring of synthetic identities, a ring of identities where the SSNs are just incrementing, you know, so the first SSN is 100 million, then 100 million in one, 100 million in two, it becomes clear that the fraudsters are just sort of creating these synthetic identities off of a checklist. And there's clear non-randomness there, and we can differentiate that from real patterns of SSN issuance. So it's insights like that, which go into the models that we produce, which ultimately are how we're able to detect this in real time. Now, all of the insights that we've ever discovered as a team, all the data that we have about identities in the United States and what they look like and histories, we check all of that every time we receive a application in less than 500 milliseconds. We've done this over 200 million million times, verifying identities in financial institution application flows, and are able to detect all this really, really quick.
Now, you do that for banks, financial institutions. Do you do that for, I want to say, broker dealers like Schwab, Fidelity, and all those? What other institutions do you work with?
Yeah, so we work with over 100 different financial institutions that run the gamut from lenders, depository institutions, brokerages, insurance, really any time that someone is trying to validate an identity of like, hey, is this a real individual? We do this for both consumer products. We also do this in small business lending setups or for small businesses as well. You know, as we know, oftentimes the most important part of understanding small business is actually who the owners are, who the control person is, who the beneficial owners are. In addition to synthetic identities, it turns out that fraudsters create even synthetic businesses. In fact, we've even seen this recently in the PPP stimulus program, where criminals have stolen money from all of us taxpayers and done so by claiming that they have a business, creating synthetic beneficial owners, creating synthetic employees, and claiming hardship and stealing millions of dollars from the government.
Wow. I thought what was going on with unemployment was bad.
we work in that space as well. There's been a lot of money flowing out the door, and unfortunately, the criminals have taken a part of it. But to answer your question, we work with all sorts of different financial institutions, government. Anytime someone's really verifying, trying to figure out, is this person who they say they are?
So, you know what? One of the things that I've been lucky enough, and I'm really like the true crime guy. I love all that stuff. And we talked about this before.
You're my kind of guy.
Yeah. And one of the things that, this is scary, but it's not as scary as somebody stealing your identity, because usually they're designed to go after big institutions. And we were talking about the patterns there. And I remember talking to an FBI gentleman that dealt with money laundering. And he says, when you talked about the patterns, and he says, with money laundering, they will vary certain increments, but it'll always be 3,210, 4,513. And they will vary those deposits, but they'll have them through like 19 banks. And when I used to work in the insurance field, there's a big thing with anti-money laundering. And are you does CenturyLink work with companies to make sure people who are depositing into financial accounts, I don't know how they could, that they're actually real? Is that something that you're working with?
We do. And, for depository accounts like savings and checking, it's a really interesting use case because, to your point, the financial institution typically isn't on the hook for losing too much money. But there is a massive risk of money laundering and other kinds of financial crimes. And, you mentioned the unemployment insurance, the fraud there, and, certain states got hit very, very hard to the tune of literally billions of dollars there. But that money all moved, had to go somewhere. And, it went through accounts held at depository institutions in the United States, both traditional ones as well as some prepaid card programs. And I'm happy to say that CenturyLink was able to stop some of it. We don't work with every financial institution in the United States yet. And, we were able to stop it from going to the partners on our platform. And that's one of the use cases where, even if we're not necessarily helping a specific financial institution to prevent their own losses, the work to prevent fraud is actually more of an industry-wide thing where we can help all of society, other financial institutions, government, taxpayers to reduce the load of criminals on our society.
Now, obviously the criminals know they are now getting wind that you're doing this. So I don't know if you can discuss this on air, but how are the tactics of the criminals changing? I mean, they've got to be changing and doing different things to see if they can get around you.
Yeah, that's right. The criminals continually get smarter. I will say, I think we're blessed that 80% of them are not too bright. And 80% of it is usually pretty easy to catch. So, you know, thank you, all the criminals out there, the ones that are in that 80%. But the 20% does get quite a bit harder. And we've seen some really, really interesting kind of surprising tactics from them. You know, for example, on the identity theft front, one of the things we've seen recently is fraudsters actually stealing the identities of everyone with a common name. You know, so for example, they'll literally steal every identity of every John Smith in the United States. The theory being that, hey, if you set up a email address for a John Smith, or you set up a phone number, or maybe make a fake ID, you can actually reuse that. And so the sorts of tactics that these criminals are doing is it continues to improve. They continue to come up with new ideas. From a certain perspective, it's I see what they're doing, and it can be pretty impressive. You know, obviously, we do our best to stop it, and we're almost always successful. But sometimes you have to be a little impressed by the creativity of these bad guys.
Yeah, no, I you know what? How to say, they have the show, The World's Dumbest Criminals, and that's 80%, and the 20% is the ones you got to worry about, which is better, but also harder.
And I wish that they would just turn themselves to productive means. You know, a lot of these. The 20%, they're really creative. They work really hard. We'll see fraud attempts on the weekends. And, if only they would actually try to contribute productively to society, we could be living in a very different world.
Well, you know what? When I was first, I used to work for AAA, the Automobile Club, and we had somebody that walked in and bought traveler's checks and then would call and say they were stolen or he lost them. And they started tracking it. And this person would go from one place to one office to the next and do this. And, he said, yeah, that's how they launder money. And I said, I don't get it. I don't think, he goes, the issue is, Steve, is you don't think that way. These people think that way all the time. And their whole goal is, how can they do this simply and easily? And he says, that's just the mindset. My hope is that we have more people with the right mindset and not the wrong one. Otherwise, you'd be out of business.
It's funny because you do this business for a long enough time, you start becoming suspicious of everyone. You know, my mom will call me on the phone and be like, okay, mom.
Naftali, I want to thank you so much for being here. If we have somebody from a company that is having these issues or thinks they might be having an issue or just want to find out, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get in contact with you so they can engage your firm and so on?
Yeah, they can check out our website, www.centilink.com. That's S-E-N-T-I-L-I-N-K.com. Or you can find us on LinkedIn or just reach out to me.
Great. Hey, I want to thank you for being here with us. I hope your life is safe and healthy, and hopefully we'll have you back again and hear about some cool stuff that people are doing or trying.
Yep. All right, Steve, really a pleasure. Great to chat with you today.
Sounds great. Hey, thank you. We'll see you.
See you soon. Take care.
Bye. That was Naftali Harris from CentiLink. He was one of the co-founders there. And you know what? We were really talking about the synthetic fraud, how it affects you in your bottom line, the whole shot. There's not a lot you could do about it because they're focusing on big company. But know that this stuff is happening. And there's many ways that, if you're with a company, you can get in contact with them. They can help you with it. The cool thing is they're helping many companies reduce their losses from fraud. Now, we've got one final segment to go. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. My name is Steve Sexton, and that was Niftali Harris from CenniLink. He was talking about synthetic fraud, what you can do, what they do to protect you, reduce large financial institutions' costs because of fraud, so you can have better, lower costs, better rates for things. Now we're going to be talking about some of the biggest pitfalls that people have if they decide to retire early and how to go about avoiding them. Now, one of the things that's really interesting, got people that show up in the office. We've been talking to them for a long time. They went on a wonderful vacation with the family and decided, you know what? I'm done working. It's overrated. They go in and they quit and resign. They're retired. Others, just in the last year, because of this pandemic, we've seen companies just cut out a level of management to save on costs. And as a result, people that are in their late 50s, early 60s are getting retired. And it's tough to find a position that'll pay them the same amount of money or what they need. And they decide, you know what, maybe I'll just retire. Others, hey, they found some health issues hitting them. And they realize, you know what, I probably got 20 years worth of life left. And you know what, I think it's time for me to retire. The reality is they're all retiring early, okay? And one of the biggest things that we see people do is they rely on factors they quite frankly don't control, okay? And they set up, they do their Excel spreadsheet, they set up that old plan, they said, look, if I can average a 7% rate of return or 6% or 8% or whatever it is, and they feel that, hey, you know what, I'm gonna be able to retire, and they just think the market's gonna turn 7%, okay? And then they look at, hey, as long as inflation stays below 3, I'm good. And we all know, if you look back to the 70s, we had 8, 10, 12% inflation in the late 70s. And you know what? And if your house keeps growing up by about 3%, that's great. And oh yeah, healthcare costs, they should stay about the same. Well, we know that doesn't happen. Here's the reality. Many people that retire early think they can do so many things based off certain constants. And those constants just quite frankly don't exist. Because you know as well as I do, the market does that. You also know inflation goes up and down from year to year. In fact, we only saw a small increase in Social Security. That should give you a hint. Secondly, you look at your home prices. Hey, home prices are going up right now. That's because there's not a lot of demand, but low interest rates. So prices are going up. But when there is a lot of demand, okay, or when the 8.5% of all mortgages that are in default right now start going to the foreclosure short sale route, you're going to see a wider range of homes on the market. You're going to see prices come down. You know what? That's the cycle of the real estate market. Hey, and healthcare, it doesn't matter. It's growing at about 5% a year. So you don't want to stick with things you can't control. All right. Now, the chance, you know what? The key here is you want to set your financial situation up to minimize any reliance on factors outside your control. For example, one of the big factors that I see people doing is this. It's called the sequence of returns. If you retire and you have positive returns for the first 2, 3, or 4 years, hey, you're probably going to be fine. And if you compare that to somebody who had negative returns for the first couple of years of retirement, you find the person who had negative returns for the first couple of years in the market compared to the one who had positive returns and just kind of flip the script every 5 years. The one with the negative returns in the first couple of years will obviously have a lot less money and likely run out of money quicker than the somebody who had positive returns. So what does that tell you? It tells you it makes most sense to look at those sequential rate of returns, which also means reducing the risk that you're taking on in your portfolio. So if the market does go negative, you could be in a position to where you're not going to be as impacted. In addition to that, you also might want to look at the sequence of distributions. Most people have some sort of asset allocation where 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. Problem is when that was created in 1956, bonds were creating returns in the 7s and 8s on the yield basis, which was great. But now, at best, you're getting about 2.5. So how is it able to keep up with that? And there's a lot of risk there. So you have to look for something there that would do that. Secondly, if you just were to take out the money out of everything each and every year where the market is up or down, you know what? In 17 years, if you started with $1 million, you'd only have $670,000. You know, think about that. I know I just gave you numbers, but think of it like this. What if when the market is moving forward, you're taking your withdrawals from what's in the market?
You find a suitable safe bucket, whether you're using bonds and annuities, something that's going to get you a rate of return that's higher than 2.5 or 3 that's exceeding inflation, and allowing that to grow and just let it grow. But when the market goes down, you take your withdrawals out of the safe bucket. In fact, you can have anywhere from 25 to 50% more at the end of that 17 years, providing you've reduced the risk and looked at the sequential rate of return. Now, you want to be talking to your advisor here. Now, he hears this. The other side here is we see people that just spend way too much too early. Hey, you know what? I'm going to remodel the house. I'm going to get the new car. I'm going to have the medical, you know, issue. I'm going to go do the big trip and all that stuff. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. But if you're looking, if you go and do all those things or just do the remodel instead of $100,000 remodel, you have $150,000. They didn't plan for the $50,000. How's it impact your retirement? Okay. So what you want to do is you want to start taking one withdrawals on a consistent basis, like it's a paycheck. Hey, how much am I taking out every 2 weeks? Okay, if you can do that, you can put yourself in a situation where you're living on the paycheck, all right? And then you can plan your expenses appropriately to fit within your budget, which allows you to keep things there. So one of the big things that I see, okay, is people, they go to work and they're just spending money and saving money because that's what they always done, but they've never really sat down and figured out exactly how much these expenses are. So you want to look and find out how much all those expenses are. You want to list them out, everything from the gas, the Starbucks, the eating out, travel, the insurance, the property, the property taxes, everything. Once you do that, you're now in a position where you understand exactly what your expenses are. You can see how long your income's gonna last, providing you get some sort of an average rate of return, okay? And then you wanna take a look at that and say, hey, okay, here I am, all right? And then take a look at your income sources. One of the biggest things that I see is people taking Social Security early. Hey, you can take it at age 62, okay? If your spouse passes away, you can start as early as age 60, but understand something. If your full retirement age is 66, if you take it at 62, you're only going to get 75% of your full retirement amount. If your full retirement age is 67 and you take Social Security 62, you're only going to get 70%. Now, I want to point a fact out to you. In 2021, the average Social Security amount that's paid out to the average worker is $1,589. The maximum at full retirement age is $3,113. That tells you that a lot of people took their Social Security early. Now, I'm going to bet some of them did the math and did some analysis and, you know, hey, they understood what they're getting into. But on the flip side, there's a lot of people who didn't look into the pros and cons of making that decision. It makes a lot of sense to look at when you do that. Why? Because it allows you not only to protect your assets longer because you're able to have more money, okay? But two, it allows you to create a larger income. If you were to pass away and your wife were to receive that income, like for example, my mom raised 5 kids and, you know, say my dad gets 3,000, my mom gets 1,500 and it keeps going up. But the reality is when my mom passes away, she's going to get the higher of the 2 Social Security. So you know what? She's going to get $3,000. She's going to lose 1,500. And this needs to be taken into account when you retire early. How is it going to impact your spouse? Now, one of the other things that I see here is this, and it comes down to too much time, too little money. Okay. You know what? Retirement sounds like a dream come true, which is why most people shoot for retiring early in the first place. But all that extra time that you don't have anything planned for, people spend money carelessly on shopping, travel, arts, crafts, home decorating, expenses associated with hobbies, and so on. So here's the thing. Instead of being bored and going crazy at home, it makes a lot of sense to figure out what you're going to do. You know what? My dad retired at the age of 57. Okay. And that was because his work decided they were going to lay off a whole bunch of things because he was in the government defense business. And you know what? He didn't want to move to a really freezing city. So he decided to retire. All right. But he retired cold. And you know what? Other than taking a trip, he had to figure out how he's going to retire, what he was going to do. Okay. So he took language lessons. He went and got involved with the church. He got involved with charities, went and helped out at the hospital, took up golf, did a whole bunch of things. One of the biggest things that I recommend you do is figure out what you're going to do before you retire, okay?
I've had people come to me and I've asked them questions. I said, what are you going to do in retirement? He goes, I don't know. We just want to retire. I said, I recommend you figure out what you'd like to do and start working your way towards that. If that means moving to another state, by all means, go and visit that state for a call, take your vacation there. Make sure it's a place you want to live in. And I recommend you do it in the worst weather month of the year in that state. Okay. I recommend, you know, I got one couple that they went and bought all the activities of Groupon. So they would go to Groupon and they get a sailing lesson. Want to figure out if they love sailing. Turns out they both loved it. They did a Groupon and they went into cooking classes. Wife hated it. Husband loved it. He still does it. She doesn't. And they figured out things there and they figured out how they were going to live their life that would enable them to have a retirement, build a retirement. Whether you want to get into charities or do other things, you're going to have to do something with your time besides doing all those tasks you haven't done for 20 years. Now, so again, I want to thank you all for joining us. This has been a wonderful segment. We had Naftali Harris of SendingLink talking about synthetic fraud. We also had Benjamin Weiss of CoinFlip talking to us about cryptocurrency, what's happening, right way to get the wallet or the cloud storage to make sure you properly save your cryptocurrency. Now, I want to thank you all for joining us. Looking forward to seeing you next week on the show. You have a wonderful day. Again, this is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve Show.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.